Windows or doors sticking? Cracks in your drywall or brickwork? These can be signs of a structural foundation problem. PermaSeal can help with that. Free inspections, transferable warranties, financing, and peace of mind. PermaSeal, 800-421-7325 or permaseal.net.
Good morning, Steve Dales, Pet World on WGN. And my guest today makes me nervous. His name is David Fry. He has authored, and he's a good friend, and he's authored many books, including Angel on a Leash, Angel by My Side. He travels around the country talking about therapy dogs. He also is a part of the reason why there's the National Dog Show Therapy Dog Symposium, which we'll talk about. But first, I want to talk about the National Dog Show presented by Purina on Thanksgiving Day. After the Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade, it's on NBC, and this guy right here, you'll recognize his voice. You know, because, and you might recognize his voice because, David, your ratings for this are like higher, they're in the top 10 of any event, anything happening over the course of the years. So a lot of people hear your voice.
Well, I'm humbled by that. I mean, we have 25 million people in our TV audience, and of course, all the other places that it shows up over time. But yeah, it's unbelievable. We started this show in 2002, and the first week, the first show that we did in 2002 was the highest rated show on NBC that week. And that what we had 9 million people then, and we've grown through the years to 25. John O'Hurley and I have been partners for 24 years in this. This will be our 24th. And it's just amazing. We've got the perfect time slot. We've got a network that loves us. And I think people want to see fun things about their dogs.
But I do have a question that I've not asked you before. How do you feel about killing Jimmy Stewart? Here's what I meant and mean by this.
No.
I believe It's a Wonderful Life used to air at that same time slot, and the ratings just weren't there because It's a Wonderful Life appears on every station everywhere at this time of year. So NBC said, what can we replace Jimmy Stewart with?
Jimmy Stewart with.
Yeah, and they chose David Fry.
Well, I don't think we killed Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart's the greatest dog fan there is. And so we love that, but Jimmy can exist a lot of places. We've got the time slot for Thanksgiving Day, which makes it just perfect. It's live. It's new every year. And God bless Jimmy Stewart, great friend of dogs everywhere. But he's got room to be elsewhere, and we're thrilled with the time slot that we have.
Actually, you're right. Jimmy Stewart was a huge animal lover. I had the opportunity to interview him once, and we spent most of the time talking about not whatever it was he was promoting, but about two things. And I remember talking about his dogs and also talking about elephant conservation, of all things. We did. And what a great – do you remember when he was on Johnny Carson?
And the greatest thing I ever heard him do was on Johnny Carson about a dog named Bo.
Exactly. Right? Yes. Yeah, so check it out on YouTube, and I believe you're guaranteed to cry or your money back. And we are talking, if you don't know, about the great actor, James Stewart. All right, back to the National Dog Show presented by Purina. How many years has this been for you and John, did you say?
This will be our 24th, and it's amazing. The relationship we have is great. We're great personal friends. We do things together in the off season, and we're in constant touch with each other. And he's been a great partner. He started in, you know, as a novice in the dog show world, in the dog world. He had his own dogs. He loved his dogs. But the things that he gets to do on our dog show, he's gotten better every year. He works hard at it, and he's got a pretty good eye. When he looks, he can look at a dog in the ring and say, you know what, that dog looks great. And I said, geez, you're right. You're right, John. I think that he has learned a lot being there. He's learned a lot from me. I've learned a lot from him. And we have fun doing it, which is, I think, important for our audience to hear that.
Of course, we're talking about Jay Peterman from the Seinfeld days when we talk about John O'Hurley and his amazing, beautiful voice. But I want to talk about those dogs. So you look at a dog and you know that dog, or John, it doesn't matter, might be one of the dogs that might be best in that particular breed, or maybe best in group. What is it about that dog? What is it about the dog where you say, Aha. And I know you also are a dog show judge, so you know these things. Why? But how do you know these things? How do you know that dog is going to be better than that dog right next to it?
Well, we start judging, you know, the technical part of it is we judge every breed, every dog by the written standard that describes the ideal specimen of that breed. So you know that where the things are supposed to be. They're all in the right place. They have the right angles. They have the right eye color, right eye shape, things that sound aesthetic but really may have something to do with their form and function. But also, when it comes down to it, on our show, we're seeing the best of the best. So you know that there's going to be little things that make a difference, and we talk about the dog owning the ground that it stands over in the ring, and that I had an old-time dog show once that gave me the perfect quote for it. It's a dog show, and you got to show. The dog's got to exhibit the right temperament and personality for its breed, which may be different from breed to breed, but still, that's part of the deal. It's a dog show, and we want to see that with the dogs that are in the ring.
Does that cocky attitude, I'm using my term here, but is that one of the reasons why terriers seem to show so well, where a golden retriever or a Labrador retriever, two of the most popular breeds in America, I don't believe either one has ever won best in show at the National Dog Show.
No, neither one has. Neither one had won at Westminster in all the years that Westminster's been doing it as well. And it's, you know, the terriers, we say the terriers were bred to look for trouble. So they're on their toes all the time, looking around, seeing what's going on elsewhere. And I think that gives them a little bit of an edge in the ring with showmanship. Goldens and Labs, God love them, they are more attuned to their people. You know, what are we doing next? I don't need your help, or I want your help. I want to do whatever you're doing. Me too is their attitude. And I think that softens them a little bit, which is wonderful for a companion animal in the dog show ring. The judge has to know that and has to consider that Goldens are not supposed to have or exhibit the same kind of temperament and attitude that terriers are. They're going to have fun in the ring and be a great show dog, and you have to know that as a judge that's the way they're supposed to be.
So you know what a good interviewer does. He will ask a question that I'm about to ask, and then give you time to think about it because there'll be a commercial break. So here is...
All right, well, this worries me already, but go ahead.
So let me talk about your favorite thing to broadcast that you never have, and that's a cat show. I don't think you have.
I did a cat show. Mary Carrillo and I did a cat show.
Really?
One year. The Kitten Olympics on the Hallmark Network, I believe it was.
I never
the
knew
Kitten
that.
Kitten Olympics. Well, I was a last-minute substitute for John Sterling, the Yankees announcer who was sick, and Mary and I did the show, and it was great fun. Mary's allergic to cats, for crying out loud. So I'm the guy holding all the cats in the pictures. I'll find you a picture, just so you have that as final proof that I actually did a cat show on TV.
Sounds like a huge success.
I love cats.
Yeah, well, okay.
We love cats, right, Drew?
You're talking to your dog now, and yes, I know. He talks to his dog. I know that you love cats. So now, here's the problem. I'm out of time. So we're going to hear the story I'm going to tell. I will ask you the question related to that story about a cat show, even though I'm talking to Mr. Dog Show, David Fry, and we'll be right back on WGN. Here he is, David Fry, Mr. Dog Show. We're about to talk about cats. The National Dog Show, presented by Purina, is on Thanksgiving Day, as it has been now for ever following the Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade on NBC. All right, so I was at an event, and this is true, it happened, cat agility. Yeah, cats do an obstacle course similar, almost identical to what the dogs do, an agility course. And this person was holding a stick, for lack of a better word, I know there is a better word, and the cat would follow the stick and go through things under and jump over and all that. And the cat was doing it great and then made a beeline right into the audience, grabbed someone's tuna sandwich, and came right back and continued doing exactly what the cat was
doing. Of course he did.
Yes. So there's that story. What is the craziest dog show story that you have? You've been announcing dogs. You're the dean of the dog show announcers. So you've been doing it a long time. You must have a story or two.
Well, in 35 years, I've got a story. But first, I want to tell you, I've been to a cat show. And when cat people make fun of dog shows, I say, listen, you can't talk anymore because I've been to a cat show. I know what goes on at a cat show, so don't make fun of us. It's fun for all of us. It's fun for our animals. It's fun for us together with the animal that we love, dog or cat.
True.
That's great. And,
yep.
And we love it. We love our cats.
Yes.
So, funniest thing ever in a dog show, I don't know. I think it's dogs being themselves. You know, they'll go over to the ringside and they'll stick their head over the ring and interact with kids or people who are sitting there. They run through the ring, and every once in a while on network television, they'll stop and do what dogs do when you're taking them out for a walk. And I remember one year Roger Karras was on the PA, and we had a dog was running right down the middle of the ring for its final go-around and stopped and made a deposit in the center of the ring at Madison Square Garden. And Roger Karras, God love him, says, well, it is a dog show after all. And, you know.
I remember that, actually.
Yeah.
So proof that it did happen is that I remember that as well.
Well, you know, we're all scrambling around when we're saying, you know, don't show this on, you know, can put the camera somewhere else. You don't have to, just let us tell you about it. But that, you know, that's part of dogs. That's what dogs do to us every once in a while. They stop and do something that we're not quite ready for, and we need to explain it later that they are real dogs. So that's what I say. That's the great thing about dog shows is that we're showing dogs that are our pets during the week. We dress them up a little bit on the weekends and take them to dog shows perhaps, but during the week they do the same things at our home that they do at yours, that they are on our couches, they're shedding on our black clothes, they're stealing food off the counter, and every once in a while they probably drink out of a toilet, just like your dog does. And I think that's the beauty of the dog show, is that people can relate to the dogs when they see them in the ring and say, you know, that looks just like my Brittany Grace. And if you have a Brittany and you're watching our dog show, we want you to be rooting for the Brittany. I call it the alma mater factor. It's like you're rooting for your school. That let's cheer for the dogs that we know something about, and then we can learn something about the dogs. That what's the deal on that poodle haircut? How come that dog doesn't have any hair? You know, why is the dog that color? All these things that you wonder about on the dog show, we hope that we can tell you that when you're watching us and add to the fun.
Well, in fact, you and John O'Hurley do answer a lot of those questions. Every year there are new breeds. Well, they're not new breeds, but new to the American Kennel Club that you also feature as well. Same this year?
We've got one this year. Brings us to 214 breeds and varieties eligible for the show. But this year we have the Danish-Swedish Farm Dog, a working breed. And it's a little, you know, 18-pound dog that's a working dog, a herding dog. Great energy, as you might imagine. It looks a little bit like a terrier. They don't like you to say that. But it's a fun animal to be around. And we have this every year. We get new breeds almost every year. And it's fun to see these new breeds and hear their history and why it took them so long to get to our party here in this country. And they're dogs that have been around in some places for hundreds or even thousands of years. It's just they've never had a following or enough of them in this country to justify the AKC bringing them into dog shows. And we get that every once in a while, and it's fun to see them and fun to hear their stories.
Is this a dog with an identity crisis? Is it a Danish dog? Is it a Swedish dog?
Well, I think I don't know about my geography, but I think the countries are pretty close together.
So it's a dog on the border.
Dog.
Yeah,
they're all over. They were near extinction at one time, and I think having the joint effort of two countries probably helped them survive.
All right, so here's the question I always ask, and you always never answer: who will win the dog show?
It's going to be a great dog. It's going to be a dog that's a great specimen of its breed. It's going to be a dog that shows at the dog show, and it's going to be a dog that judge likes. Remember, this is pretty subjective. You put two dogs of the same breed together, and you're judging them. One judge is going to like one better than the other. The other judge is going to like the other. We can judge from outside the ring and say, why didn't he like the dog that I liked? And I'm standing outside the ring and watching. Well, I don't get my hands on them. I don't get to look in their mouth. I don't get to have the same knowledge that judge may have about that breed. And it all depends. Every dog has its day, as they say, and maybe this will be the day that it'll be your breed and your dog out there doing his thing.
Is that part of the allure, part of the reason why so many people watch? There are more dogs than ever before. That's part of the reason. And we love dogs. But is it also because, so I know you're a huge sports fan. When a Seattle Kraken, you're based in Seattle, skates down the ice and scores a goal, which is happening a lot lately, and when that happens, it's a goal or it's not a goal. With the dog show, it can be, depending on who's watching, that dog can be better than that dog, and people can have definite opinions, and in a way, they're both right.
Absolutely, and that's, we have all these great performance events that the American Kennel Club puts on, agility and obedience and things like that, but in the dog show, it's subjective. One judge, you read the standard, and it says that the dog should have great length of neck. Well, what's great length of neck? What does it mean to you? It means one thing to you, it means something to somebody else. Maybe the head, the dog's head structure is more important to me than the dog's movement. And the other judge says, no, I got to have a good moving dog. I'll forgive a little bit in the head. There's no perfect dog out there. That's why the sport stays alive, because we have new dogs. Dog show is supposed to identify superior breeding stock to make the next generation. And hopefully, every time we create the next generation, we bring a happy, healthy dog into this world that maybe has the physical traits that are a little bit better than the ones before them, and that's the dog that's going to win our dog shows.
The National Dog Show, presented by Purina, Thanksgiving Day on NBC, and that follows the Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I'm sure we will all see you and hear you. And when we come back, David Fry, I want to talk about a huge passion of yours, and that is animal-assisted therapy. An event coming up having to do with animal-assisted therapy, a symposium that you helped to launch several years ago. And what animal-assisted therapy is and how it works and much more on WGN. I'm about to answer a very big question that scientists have debated about for years and years. Are cats social or are they antisocial? Well, it's clear when living on their own term outdoors, cats choose to live. They choose. No one forces them to live in a colony, or it's called a clowder, with other cats. And at this point, finally, colony social structures have been studied. And most people in America share homes with not one cat. Some people have one cat, but on average, there are 2.5, I think it is, cats in a home. So they must get along with one another. Also, 25% of homes with a cat, approximately 25%, also have a dog, or at least one dog, in the home. A paper published in the Journal of Veterinary Behavior in 2014, John Bradshaw points out the domestic cat is the only member of the cat family to form social relationships with people. That we know, Asian and African lions, they live in social groups, true social groups like wolves do. They hunt together. They bring up their young together. They interact in a way that isn't, in some ways, too different than human beings. They're a true social species. Cheetahs, to some extent. Other cats, no. They are solitary, the other wild cat species, of which there are many. The big ones like leopards and some of the small ones like, the Asian fishing cat. All of these species are not social species. But what about our domestic cats? Well, it turns out domestic cats are what's called facultatively social. Facultative means it's optional or flexible. When cats benefit by being social, they're in a position to be social, they can be social, but only to a certain extent. Again, they don't hunt together. They don't feed together. So we at home put out a food bowl, and we have, say, you have three cats at home, and we expect those cats to eat from the food bowl, and many learn to tolerate it. That's actually not the right way to feed our cats. We should have, if you have three cats, three different food bowls. The other idea is that at some point in time, a cat may need a specific diet, a therapeutic or prescription diet, and you want to be sure the other cats don't necessarily get that diet. So they're trained to each eat out of their own bowl, which are separated from one another, which is also the right way to do it. In any which case, To a certain extent, the truth is our cats are social, but on their own terms, like cats do everything else. My guest is David Fry. We've been talking about the National Dog Show presented by Purina on Thanksgiving Day. But in addition to that, I don't know anyone more passionate about therapy dog work. He's written two books, Angel on a Leash, Angel by My Side. In addition to that, you are an ambassador, I think, for animal-assisted therapy. And in fact, we're just awarded the Purple Poppy Award, having to do with the National Service Dog Monument, or which you can explain to me, David. But I will tell you what you've done for animal-assisted therapy, and I will talk about the symposium coming up in a moment, is something that is so commendable, but I know something you believe in. You know, you like doing this other stuff, which makes it possible in my world, because I know you pretty well, for you to also have a platform to talk about animal-assisted therapy. So thank you so much for promoting what has saved human lives and changed human lives. And we're talking about dogs going into all sorts of settings, nursing homes, senior living centers, into schools, and on and on and on. You've read about this. You've heard about it. Maybe you have had a dog who's done it. And a part of that story is the guy I'm talking to right now. So thank you, David, for all the work you've done and continue to do.
Thank you, Steve. I am blessed. And as you mentioned, I do have great platforms. 25 million people hear us talk about therapy dogs on our dog show. And if it can get people to think about, hey, maybe I can do that with my dog. It's not tough. There's some very easy ways for you to get involved and easy things for you to do. If your dog has the right temperament for it, any breed or mixed breed can do it. And you're changing people's lives. And you know what? You change your own life because you're doing great things for people. But the other thing I talk about too is that the dogs are doing the work. Meredith Vieira asked me once, what are you thinking about when you put your dog into bed with one of these patients? I said, I'm thinking stay out of their way. That just let them in there. Let them interact with the people. I'll keep them out of their tubes and their sutures, but let them be there and be part of that person's day. Some of these people just live their lives in the moment, and so do dogs. So it's a great thing for everybody concerned. I joke about it. Obviously, my role and anybody else's role is a little bit more than this, but I joke about it and say it's about the dogs. I'm in charge of treats and transport, and I get them there, and I keep them out of trouble, and I let everybody enjoy the moment, and that's what therapy dogs is all about. Get somebody to talk about something that they haven't talked about for a while or think about something other than the challenges that they get every day with somebody who's the next person coming in their room is going to stick a needle in them or make them take some pills or do something. I'm in there with the dog to make them smile and let them think about the great things in this life that they've experienced or will continue to experience by getting well.
You know, you're a pretty humble guy. Tell me about this award.
The National Service Animal Monuments sponsor the Purple Poppy Awards. This was the third year of the awards, and they recognize service animals and therapy animals, their people and their organizations, and the contributions that they make to their respective fields. And this year I was blessed to be chosen as the person of the year, and it was I'm humbled by it because there's a lot of people in this world that do a lot of great things with their dogs and therapy dog work, and a lot of great service animals that do great things for their people, their human partners, and the organizations that promote and back them, I think are all deeply into it, and I'm humbled to be a part of it, and I'm just going to keep doing it until the day I die.
Now, you mentioned service animals and therapy animals, and I think it's important for us to talk about. There is a distinction there, is there not?
There is. A lot of people, you know, don't understand the difference if they're not fully intimately involved in it. But a service animal is an animal that performs things for a person, a specific person, their human partner. Whether they are helping them with mobility assistance or alerting them on problems with their health and well-being that they need to know, that it's a medical alert dog. For example, I wrote a book about a golden retriever that alerted on his human partner when he was about to have an unstable angina attack, a heart attack. And the dog could feel the attack coming in the guy 10 minutes before he could feel it himself. So it gave him the opportunity to take his medicine and head off some of the effects of the attack. So some of those stories that are amazing, but they can pick up your keys when you drop them on the floor. They can help you open a door. They can help you open drawers in your kitchen. They can do all kinds of great things to make your life great. And there's a lot of different service animals. We all know about guide dogs and blind for the blind and people like that. And it's a wonderful part of having that. Therapy dogs are the dogs that visit other people, that a human partner brings them to visit people in healthcare facilities or on the streets. I have a service on the streets, so to speak, where my dog's interacting with people on the street. We talk to panhandlers. We talk to people who are out there every day living a tough life, and we make them, we brighten their day a little bit and give them something to talk about, and they talk to us about maybe their dog that they had at another point in their life, and we get them to smile. So a lot of it is getting people to get out of the rut that they're in or get away from the day that they're having by having us in there to help think about something else. So,
and most often,
therapy dogs do great things.
Yeah, they do. And most often in organized programs, of which we have several in Chicago and the Chicago area, and they're all over the country that go into all – I rattled off some of the facilities, but that's just some examples of some of the facilities to help people of all ages, David.
Yeah. Well, you and I have visited the Ronald McDonald House in Chicago. We visited the Children's Hospital in Chicago. We visited the Shriners Hospital out in the suburbs. And we've done that together and spoken there together. So we see it every day. And people are just think about your dog. If your dog has that personality, share them. Let them be a part of somebody's, making somebody's life a little bit better for the moment. And that's a great thing that they do. And there's a lot of great organizations out there that do the Rainbow Therapy Animals in Chicago are high on my list of people who are doing it right. And in my own organization, I started a charity. You were on my board for Angel on a Leash that we formed in 2004 in New York City, where we would create and administer therapy dog programs in various healthcare facilities. We were the first dogs ever to visit at the Ronald McDonald House in New York. We were the first dogs ever to visit at Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, and a lot of other places along the way. I visited for 7 or 8 years at the VA hospital in New York with Grace and Angel. And I'm visiting now at the VA hospital here in Seattle 2 days a week with True. So those things can go on. I'm a veteran, so I'm feeling like I'm putting a little something back into it and watching out for some of my guys out there, a lot of whom are about my demographic as well. So it's great. You can tell, I hope, from my enthusiasm about what I do and about what the dog does. I get there and I watch them and get as much out of it as the patients do.
And we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the National Dog Show Therapy Dog Symposium and how you can participate, even virtually, when we come back in reality on WGN. He is the one and only David Fry, the voice of the National Dog Show, presented by Purina on Thanksgiving Day, following the Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade on NBC. But, you know, I think that while you enjoy doing that work, I know you love doing that work, there is nothing you feel more passionately about, maybe the lady in your life, I don't know, than therapy. That's none of my business, though. Than therapy dog work, which is something you've been involved with for a very long time. How did you first get involved in the way back when?
Well, I think just first when I first got involved with dogs, I moved into my own house in college. I'd never had a dog growing up. And in my family, and when I moved into my own house in college, my girlfriend said, "Hey, let's get a dog." I said, "Oh, okay. I got to do whatever the girl tells me." So we got a dog. I said, "What kind of dog?" She said, "How about an Afghan hound?" I said, "I have no idea what that is." And well, we got the Afghan hound, and 3 weeks later, the girl left and the dog stayed, and it was the best thing that could have happened to all three of us. And it got me involved with dogs, and I met other people with Afghans, got involved with showing. Fell into the therapy dog world with my wife, who was involved with therapy dogs too, and went from there. Moved to New York, got involved with my own charity, and got involved with therapy dogs there, and it went from there. We've been everywhere. The fun thing, the great thing is always to run into somebody on the street, perhaps, that you don't recognize them, but they recognize you from the hospital. I said, you were in my hospital room every week for about 3 weeks, for about 4 weeks, however long I was there. And they say, you made a difference in my life. And that's when those are the kinds of moments that make you think you're doing the right thing. And we are still doing it, and we'll keep doing it forever.
Sometimes therapy dogs, actually, it's dramatic. I mean, I've seen it, you know, where, and I've heard about the stories also where the dog comes in and it's this, no one can get this person out of the coma that they're in. And literally touching a dog does the trick. I mean, it's, that can be life-saving perhaps, but other times it's just moments in time where someone forgets about their illness or family members that are there have the opportunity to interact with the therapy dog. So it's not always a dramatic story, but it's always something positive. That's my perception.
But my expression for it is that a dog changes, a dog walks into the room and the energy changes. And suddenly people are smiling. And I visited the Ronald McDonald House 2 or 3 times a week when I lived in New York. And the CEO there, a guy named Bill Sullivan, who is one of my mentors in that world, was great about it. He says, when you make a child smile, you make the parent smile. And that's what we try to do here, to bring the families into that reality. But we've got a lot of people, too, that somebody has said, you know, I'm going to send you to visit this guy in this room. He has not interacted with anybody. He's upset. He thinks his family has dumped him here waiting for him to die. And it changes life. So we walk in and they immediately light up and they're positive and they're involved with the dog. And I look over at the administrator or the nurse who brought us into that room and they're in tears because they've never seen that patient react like that. We've done it before. We go into places where they don't always let dogs go. We have to get pets special permission to do some of these things where we will show up with a dog in an ICU and we walk in and we'll walk into the room and interact with the patient. And there's another person there says, and they're in gowned up and gloves and says, you know, I had to go through all this. I had to scrub in. I had to go through 2 doors. I had to do this and this and this. And I walk into the room and there's a dog in there. I said, that's right. The dog's got your friend smiling and interacting with reality. And I think that's a great thing for us to be able to do.
Absolutely. Let's talk about what animal-assisted therapy also can be, and that is a professional, whether it be a physician, a physician's assistant, a nurse, a physical therapist, but some an occupational therapist, some professional directing. This is the goal, and the dog, by fetching a tennis ball and bringing it back, and the person then tossing the ball, who had a stroke, for example, that might be the goal, for him to use that arm to toss the ball. It's goal-directed therapy, correct?
Absolutely. We do it every week at the VA hospital here in Seattle. We work with the occupational therapists at the VA, and they are the cheese masters, we call them. They have little hunks of cheese that they give to their patient and say, give it to her here. Hold your hand here. Take it here. Go over and pick it up off the table and bring it back to True. Bring it down to her from above. Walk over to her and give it to her. And before they know it, they've done their PT for the day. They've done their physical therapy for the day by trying to get the dog enthused about being involved in it. And True's enthused about cheese. So she's right there. But these guys, they're smiling. They're interacting with the dog. They're doing more than just their normal, okay, reach over here, do this, stretch here, stretch there. They're doing it to make the dog happy, and they love that, and it helps the therapist do their work.
Yeah. So tell me about, we only have 2 minutes left, the National Dog Show Therapy Dog Symposium.
It is our 7th annual this year. It's at Rowan University in New Jersey. The Schreiber family has a pet therapy program there that they've enhanced. They're also starting a vet school here this year for the first time. And it is on Tuesday, December 12th in 2025 in Glassboro, New Jersey. Michelle Pick, who is the coordinator for the therapy dog program at the university, is my partner in this. I met Michelle years ago at Penn Vet. And we've created this therapy dog program along with Steve Griffith, our publicist, who was the genius behind it all. But this year, we're honored to have you as our keynote spokesperson, and we're all excited about that. And you've got more stories than all of us put together, I think, of the great things that you've always done for therapy dogs. You've been a great believer in the program and the things that our animals do for us. So we're thrilled to have you coming in for that. We have a few other speakers as well, but you're the keynote guy. And people can register today. They go online and register at go.rowan.edu/therapydogsymposium. And you can attend virtually. You can attend in person. And it's a great day. And we'll feed you lunch. And you'll get to hear the great experiences of all of our speakers that do great things.
Well, won't feed you lunch if you attend virtually, I don't think. But give me that website one more time.
go.rowan.edu/therapydogsymposium.
And I hope people do attend virtually. It'll be a lot of fun. And aside from hearing me, and all of you hear me all too often, but all these other experts with a great experience with therapy dogs talking about a variety of different issues, the National Dog Show Therapy Dog Symposium, and don't forget the National Dog Show Thanksgiving Day presented by Purina. The National Dog Show will be following Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade on NBC. And David Fry, as always, thank you so much.
Great being with you, Steve. Thank you. We'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Great having you, or great having had you. Thank you, David. Have you seen what are called the one wheels? It's like a single wheel. It's not like a skateboard. It's a single wheel, but it kind of is, that a person goes on. I mean, they're on the city streets everywhere. And that this guy, an actor by the name of Joey Luthman, this guy, is traveling from California. He's now, I think, about to enter Oklahoma. And he's going all the way to Maine on a one wheel, to raise money for cat health studies, specifically to better understand kidney disease and cancers in cats. And we will be talking to Joey Luthman next week on the show. Also, Dr. Renee Schmid, a veterinary toxicologist, will be here to clear up some misconception online regarding grapes and raisins and their toxicity and what we can do about it. That's next week on Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN.